FBI whistleblower, really smart guy, Kyle Serafin, is joining us coming up in the next segment to talk about Tucker Carlson's revelation that Dan Bongino, while being FBI director, told him Trump ordered an investigation into accomplices with Thomas Crooks killed. And now we know it was Trump killed the Epstein investigation, all of it. Why would he do that? Bongino came out and said it's not true, even though the FBI came out last December and basically said the case was closed, that Crooks acted alone. So we're going to look at this and look at the latest on the FBI and from all his sources, what Kyle Serafin says is happening there. That's all coming up. But here's Tulsi Gabbard Friday, as she prepares to leave as the Director of National Intelligence, putting out a report on Ukraine and the bioweapon labs that the U.S. has helped expand under Obama when they took over the Russian labs after the fall of the Soviet Union. And so they tried to deny these were there, but then Victoria Nuland admitted it. These are very serious bioweapons being made there. They're used as a false flag against Russia. That's why this report is so important. And you can go now read the declassified version she put out, but there's also a classified version she delivered to the president. Now the word is RFK Jr. is about to be kicked out right after July 4th. We'll be breaking it all down. But here's Tulsi Gabbard, and we'll come back with Kyle Serafin.
After months of searching through intelligence community holdings and files, today I'm releasing new evidence of longstanding U.S. government funding of more than 120 biolabs in over 30 countries. Now, these biolabs include labs in places like Ukraine, which could be at risk of compromise due to the ongoing Russia-Ukraine war. In fact, the intelligence community had previously warned that a U.S.-funded biolab in Ukraine likely housed dangerous pathogens and remained vulnerable to longstanding threats of Russian attack, seizure, or damage. Now, until now, evidence regarding the full existence and funding of these laboratories had been knowingly withheld from you, the American people. Many of these U.S. government-funded biolabs are currently or have previously engaged in research using hazardous and highly contagious pathogens, and in some cases included dangerous gain-of-function research with very little visibility or oversight. Now, President Trump clearly understands the serious threat dangerous gain-of-function research poses to the American people. And this is why he took decisive action over a year ago. On May 25th, 2025, he signed an executive order to end federal funding of gain-of-function research around the world. Here at ODNI, I issued new guidance to the intelligence community directing increased collection on these laboratories and facilities overseas. And we're already seeing the results of this increased collection. We're learning new details, for example, on clinical trials that are underway at these facilities and that are raising significant ethical, financial, and security concerns regarding the supposed public health initiatives and U.S. national security. Now, despite the obvious potential for catastrophic global impact that research on dangerous pathogens in biolabs can have, politicians and so-called health professionals like Dr. Fauci, as well as entities within the Biden administration's national security team, lied repeatedly to the American people about the existence of U.S.-funded and supported biolabs. Not only did they lie, they threatened those who attempted to expose the truth. So this release today breaks new ground, as the information surrounding the existence, history, locations, and funding of these U.S.-funded biolabs has been intentionally covered up by very powerful people who falsely claimed that these biolabs didn't exist. Now, they accuse anyone who says otherwise to be foreign assets and traitors to America. Now, ODNI will continue working closely with partners across the U.S. government to identify exactly where these labs are and what pathogens they contain to end dangerous gain-of-function research that threatens the health and well-being of the American people and people around the world.
I'll start with sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex.
This is rocket fuel. This is incredible. This is rocket fuel. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is a cocktail I drink every day. A squirt of ultramethylene blue and T3. You are insane if you don't get it. Okay? Well, listen. You are insane if you don't get it. Okay? am a wrecking ball. I am obsessed with this. I can't stop. Stop. And now I'm having this. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is the truth. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. Do you understand that? Does that burn into your brain?
I think I'm going to buy some methylene blue now.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen right here on The Alex Jones Show.
I went down to the Mary Carter paint store. I said, give me one of them Smith & Wesson Magnum 44s. 'Cause there's a man that the law let loose and justice was not done. This man killed my wife and my only little son. I'll never forget the way he looked all through the trial. He had his big name lawyer and he had that smirky smile. Oh yeah, he got you off on a technicality.
These judges in Europe and the U.S. letting murderers, rapists out of jail to do it over and over again know what they're doing. It's designed to bring down society, to destabilize, to make you give up. It's the same thing with their COVID virus they cooked up and released, and then the deadly shots they gave us that have killed over 30 million people. This is a predatory global elite at war with the people. Now, this the first story I'm going to hit with Carl Serafin, FBI whistleblower. I mean, I'd say he's got about a 98% accuracy rate. I can't think of anything he's said that didn't come true other than he said, I think Cash Patel may resign or be fired this week a few months ago. And he said may, didn't happen. And then later it came out it was being considered and looked at. Just like we said, looks like Gabbard's out. A month and a half ago, but then Trump pulled back and didn't do it. But then I said, well, she'll be gone soon. And then sure enough, she is. And we have confirmed from the highest levels that he indeed fired her. But the issue here is not about bashing Trump, okay? We wish Trump was doing better. When I come out here and criticize something Trump's doing, it's because we need to understand who's really in control of this administration. You have Israel coming in, trying to, with the NDAA, Defense Authorization Act, literally to integrate and merge our military and intelligence. You have all these other special interests involved in our country. And then you have Trump, who we knew back at the time said, kill the Epstein investigation. And I came out and said that over a year ago. People said, oh, you're a traitor. No. And then later he said a week later, no, I think you're stupid. You're low IQ. You're not MAGA if you believe it exists. It's a hoax. So it is Trump that doesn't want Butler looked into. It is Trump that we know, told Cash Patel, don't look at foreign involvement in the killing of Kirk, which I broke 6 days after Kirk was killed, that Patel in that meeting told Gabbard and all of them, the vice president was there, so was Joe Kent, we're not looking at this foreign intelligence involvement. We're not looking at the people that said he'll be dead in a couple days there in the town. We're not looking at any of it. And then I also talked to the high-level TPUSA who talked to Patel. He said, well, we're not sure we can convict him. So I got it from inside the cabinet meeting, and I got it from TPUSA, I'm not going to say who, but up the top. It's just the top three or four people. So why would Trump do this? Now, I don't think Butler was fake. You got one guy killed, other shot. Clearly, I think there was another shooter. You can see bullet coming through, hitting bags and things. But Crooks was up there for 10 minutes. Look, guy with a gun. They said the Secret Service shot him. Then they said a cop shot him. Clearly, the official story isn't true. Clearly, the Secret Service had a partial stand down before. And Bongino did all these interviews and all these shows as a podcaster saying all the stuff we're saying it's a cover-up. When I get in there, I'm going to change it. Then they famously, a few months into the administration, what, 4 months in, go on Fox News, him and Patel, like during the headlights, and say, Epstein acted alone. He wasn't a human trafficker. He didn't have any accomplices. He killed himself. You're going to see all the proof, which wasn't proof, edited videos with masses of time missing, first 2 minutes, then, you know, more. And Crooks acted alone. And then Bongino comes out, attacks Tucker this last week. When Tucker is on Mario in the Fall, we'll play a short clip in a moment, that got our guest, and says, I can tell you that he called up all freaked out and said, you know, don't be mad at me that we're not going anywhere with this investigation because this all comes from Trump. Well, it just so happens that I was at Tucker Carlson's studios slash house in Maine when one of these phone calls was coming in, and we were late taping the podcast, so I had to haul ass after that to get to, you know, the major city that has the airport to get back to Austin. So, and he didn't tell me everything, but he basically told me the same story. But we already know that. I mean, here's a headline on the Fox News from the interview. FBI concludes Trump shooter Thomas Crooks acted alone after unprecedented global investigation. And then they say that it's pending slash on hold. And then I've got new articles with members of Congress saying there's a cover-up. FBI Stonewall investigation into Trump's attempted assassin, says congressman. So we know that they did this. We know the pieces of evidence. So I thought we'd have a real investigator, former counterterrorism FBI agent as well, to give his take on these cases themselves, and then why Trump would want his own assassination not looked into. Did they say, hey, we almost killed you, that's your warning, and he flipped over to their side? Or was it staged? It didn't look staged to me, but we'll talk to Kyle Serafin. But why would he want everything else covered up as well? And then what is the latest information he's got from all his FBI sources on the state of the DOJ? Now he wants Todd Blanche to be the new attorney general. Totally terrible. I mean, so much here that Kyle Serafin has. And he's an Air Force veteran, but an EMP before that. Also, FBI agent, counterterrorism, you name it. And we'll also put on site his news sites, KyleSerafin.com. It's a very popular podcast daily. Kyle Serafin on social media, on X and YouTube, The Kyle Serafin Show, and rumble.com/Kyle Serafin. So, Kyle, that's a long intro. Thanks for being here. Let me play this short clip that got Bongino going crazy, saying Tucker's a liar. And again, it's not just about Bongino and how unlikable he is and how his show has crashed and burned even worse than Ben Shapiro's, which is saying a lot. And we're sad for him. He even looks physically different now, like a man whose soul was sucked by some interdimensional spider. But the fact that he even looks panicked on air to push these official narratives. Here's the clip that got Bongino so mad of Tucker.
I know that about Butler. I know that Trump shut down the investigation into Butler. That is a fact. Dan Bongino told me that when he worked at the FBI. And Dan Bongino himself was terrified when I spoke to him in December. It's such a long, boring story, but basically I came into possession, I beg your pardon, accidentally came into possession of a lot of the social media posts that we were told didn't exist that were posted by Thomas Crooks in the months and years before the shooting. And I was amazed that the FBI had lied about this. So I called Kash Patel and I later called Dan Bongino and I says, you know, what is this? I'm not attacking you. It was the previous FBI administration that did this. It was Chris Wray, but what is this? And Dan Bongino became hysterical with me on the phone. I've known Dan a long time, for many years, and always gotten along with him. You know, whatever his faults, say, you know, nice guy, nice, certainly very nice to me. I never had a problem with Dan ever. And that problem began when I brought this information to his attention, and he became a different person. He was clearly terrified. I didn't get it at first, but he was hysterical. And ultimately, after a long series of text exchanges, which I still have, and phone conversations, he said, look, take it up with Trump. He's the one who shut down the investigation. And that was, I think, the first or second week of December. I think it was the beginning of the second week of December. I have it written down. But that was the moment and I realized, oh, wow, you know, there's no good explanation for shutting down an investigation into your own attempted murder. Like, this is not what we've been told it was.
Now, Bongino's responded by saying it's not true what Tucker's saying. And then I could unpack what he says. It's clearly demonstrably not true, but I'm going to let Kyle Serafin, who's even more in tune to this than I am, get into it. But it's just bizarre. So, Kyle, that's a lot I threw out there. I'm going to try to give you the floor. What's your analysis of this? And thanks for joining us on your Sunday night.
Yeah, well, good to be with you, Alex. My initial analysis is that we have this default position. We expect that if people say something to us, and they do so in a medium like this on a television or a podcast or on a video, that's going to be out there for everyone to analyze forever. that we expect that they're going to basically tell us what they believe is true. And they're not going to be operating on some sort of rogue agenda. And the sad thing is having dealt with Dan previously, coming out in the open, you know, the first interview I ever gave publicly was at the request of Daniel Bongino. It wasn't my idea. I didn't have this inkling that I should have a camera in front of me in a podcast studio and that I should do that. And somehow I was going to make money off that. So that wasn't my, you know, that wasn't my career. And it certainly wasn't a choice that I would have made for myself. But he was sort of asking, he had asked a number of people, Carrie Pickett at the Washington Times, and she had gotten to me and said, hey, can you come forward and speak? Because this audience needs to hear that there are things that are going wrong at the FBI, and they need to hear it from somebody who's been there and seen it. And at that time, it was just before the Mar-a-Lago raid had taken place. Then it took place, and I came and spoke just after that. And I recognized that there were political undertones, and that the FBI was running the FBI. Chris Wray was always a figurehead. Jim Comey, same thing. You know, spoke the language. Definitely was the cheerleader of what was going on, but they weren't the ones that were initiating a lot of this stuff. And I think Dan got to experience what that was like. I think he got to walk into that building, and he says it in his own words when you listen to the Fox interviews with people like Maria Bartiromo. The first thing he said is that someone came up and kind of put a hand on him and said, thank God you're here. And we'd like to, you know, we'd really want to help you out. There's all these bad things that are going on. Let us show you where the secret rooms are. Let us show you the documents if it was hidden. And he immediately got handled by the FBI. The entity that, you know, that exists. It's there's a reason why we talk about a thing called the deep state, the administrative state. It's the people that continue on regardless of the administration. Now, Dan Bongino had the interesting opportunity to step into a role of deputy director. And the deputy director, generally speaking, is the FBI. That is the person that has basically come forward to embody the long term institutional knowledge of the FBI. It comes from someone who's been there for 2 decades, generally speaking, maybe 2.5 decades. It's someone that's worked their way from being a case agent, GS-13, all the way up off the GF scale into the senior executive service, moves into management and the senior management that runs a field office and runs a piece of headquarters and runs a division and then steps up into what used to be called a branch and then becomes the number one person in the FBI, second only to the director. And they're the only person that has the continuity and institutional knowledge of the entire FBI for the entire time they've been there. And so that's what he stepped into.
It'd be like trying to put somebody, it'd be like trying to put a first year medical student in.
As the senior surgical resident. I mean, as a senior surgical, the head of surgery, like a department head.
With a New York City cop background and some Secret Service background, he was a fish out of water being thrown in there is the bottom line.
They're completely unrelated skill sets. Alex, it'd be like if I told you to go run a network somewhere, with 5,000, syndicates and you go, well, I've only handled my business. You know, I've probably, and I don't know this for a fact, but my buddy and I were actually talking about this, and he's a former FBI agent. We were talking today about how out of his experiential depth, I ran a restaurant that had 60 employees. I'd done that a couple times. That's probably the max number of people I've ever managed. I don't know what the max number of people that Dan Bongino ever managed was, but it wasn't 40,000. So he walked into this job and he was expected to have institutional knowledge of the entity. And by his own words, people came up to him and immediately started handling the same way that the FBI handles sources. We're here to help. We know these things. We know what you need. We're going to make you, safe, and we're going to make you wealthy, or we're going to make you protected, or we're going to give you whatever it is that you need. And the other end of it is, it's a carrot and stick kind of thing. When you handle a source, you can either get them to be interested because of patriotism and because of altruism and because of all kinds of like positive motivations, or you can give them the stick, and the stick is kind of like, hey, you're in a jam and you're about to be destroyed. So you really want to work with me and help me.
And by the way, when you first got in, you predicted all this, and that's good background MO. I'm asking you though now specifically why he tries to come out when it's clear Trump ordered this not to be looked into, like all the other stuff. And then why I'm asking you, why do you think Trump would do that? And then well, your overall view.
I'm not sure it's Trump.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's directly Trump. Now, because remember, we're taking this from Tucker Carlson, hearing it from Dan Bongino. Dan Bongino obviously has a vested interest in saying it's not him. He doesn't want to be the guy.
Big liar, because he's told lies about
he's
me.
He's lied to you. He's lied to me. He's lied to Tucker. So we know that the guy lies. I've watched him do it. I mean, the first thing he told me is he was going to, keep up with my story and that it wasn't about partisan politics. And it clearly was. So I know that Dan has lied to my face, and I know that he's lied about you because I've heard him do it. And I've also heard him say things that are completely transactionally useful to him. But I also know that he doesn't want to own this. Okay. He was at the FBI for 292 days. It took longer for my background check to clear for me to get hired on. That's the case for almost every FBI employee. So he wasn't there very long. But what I do know is this, and this is why the backstory is relevant. When he got there, he immediately wedded his future and his reputation to the ongoing success of the FBI and whatever he and Kash Patel were coming up with. And so he has to have the FBI be successful, and he has to be able to shove it off and say, well, it was somebody at ODNI, or it was someone in the rest of the United States intelligence community, or it was Donald Trump in the White House, or it was Susie. He's got to shove that off. And he can't let it be that the FBI basically came to him, people inside the bureau that were really running the show, that really understood what was going on. You know, they let him think that he was, but he didn't have the depth of knowledge to be able to even know when he was being deceived. And he didn't bring anybody with him from the outside that was going to be inherently skeptical of the positions that senior management was going to do. So whatever had happened there, he walked in fish out of water without the information that he needed. And then he had to deal with the fact that I think he got played. Well, now, whether he got threatened or not, a lot of people have said the look in his eyes is different. People look different for a lot of different reasons. It could be bad lighting in his studio. He looks very much wilder and less comfortable than when he was before. I think he's a man that knows his reputation has certainly been challenged, and it's been evaluated at a different level.
Yeah, he looks like he's a deer in the headlights. He looks like he's a beaten man. Let me hone in, because you made a lot of predictions that came true. You predicted that it was Trump going to kill the Epstein thing. He did. He's owned that. We know Kash Patel does whatever Trump tells him. He ordered no looking at foreign involvement with Kirk that we broke. It's confirmed. And then I've seen Trump now was way more engaged than he was the first administration, telling the FBI and DOJ what he wants. Doesn't mean they do it all, but at least they put on an act. So you're right. I speculate there, and I've said that I think Trump did say just leave it alone for whatever reason. But you know what? Bongino lies so much. He probably did just tell Tucker, oh, Trump said it, so leave me alone. And now he's mad that Tucker said that because he doesn't want Trump to think that he told a lie about him. So I mean, who knows? But in general, why?
I suspect, Alex, that Bongino knows that he's one or two negative true social posts away from being public enemy number one to the people that would be his core base and audience from the MAGA types. And the reason is because Donald Trump seems entirely transactional, and he's been very, very clear about that in this second administration. If you're not 100% on whatever he says goes, then you're the enemy. And the great example would be, look at what happened to Joe Kent. If you don't do it exactly the way that they want, if you come out and you try to push and you say, hey, you know, I think we got a problem here, and I think I'd like to see you guys be successful, but I think that you're getting led around a little bit, you're getting bad intel. The minute that you say something that looks even slightly negative on the administration, he's willing to cut you out of the will completely. And so
same thing with Gabbard. Roger had to save her, and he told me the conversation with Trump. But he didn't think it would be that long, and now she's gone. Absolutely.
And what's crazy about that too is that she was one of the people that was really in there, and I would have been the last person that would have get if you said, hey, just looking at the people that Trump has assembled around him, he's got RFK Jr., who's a former Democrat or like probably still a Democrat at heart. You've got Tulsi Gabbard, who ran for president underneath the Democrat banner. Like, who's going to be the heroes that are going to really step up and try to like live up to the MAGA agenda that we all voted for? And I'm a 2-time, not 3-time Trump voter. The first time I didn't vote at all because I was at the FBI Academy. I gave money to Gary Johnson. So I was never an anti-Trump guy. I actually thought he was going to get blown out like everybody else. And I laughed so hard I cried when he beat Hillary Clinton. So I look at this and I go, I never wanted less of what Donald Trump promised. I always wanted more of it. I saw what it was. And one of the things that he said that was really, really important to me was de-weaponization of government, root out the corruption in the deep state. You just played a clip leading into you and I talking of Tulsi Gabbard. And I want to just address something that people should be really aware of. Tulsi Gabbard just told you that there were lies about COVID. There were lies about biolabs. There were lies about pathogens being developed all over the world. What she didn't tell you is that there's going to be criminal cases into people inside the federal government who approved it, who allowed it to propagate, who allowed it to be used against whatever was going, whether COVID came out of that specifically or whether just these programs in general are a general danger. She didn't say anyone's going to go to prison for that. And I
by
think
the way,
that
stop, 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 because I intended to bring that back up to you and play it if you hadn't seen it. How big a deal is it in, as she leaves, putting out a report that we know all of it's true, it's already all come out, that the government's sure. lying, that they're doing gain of function, they're doing it in Ukraine. And but the key is, notice, no prosecutions. Absolutely. Go ahead.
That's the worst thing that I can hear. What this should be coming from Todd Blanche. It should be coming from somebody at, you know, either some specific part, national security end of DOJ, or maybe it comes from the FBI. Why are we hearing it from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, who does not have a law enforcement mission? And again, what this continues to be, and this is the reason why I think you and I are concerned, they're tacitly admitting, like, yeah, there's a bunch of bad stuff. We're going to tell you what it is, but we're also hoping that that's enough for you, that there's not going to be prosecutions. There's not going to be justice. There's not going to be people who are removed from their offices over this. I mean, this looks like every single thing that I keep seeing in the Trump administration. That's the worst part of it, is that we get PR releases, these sort of press releases that say, this is what you wanted to know. And then people go, yeah, but we also wanted some follow-on actions. We didn't want you to tell us that it was bad. Everybody knew it was bad. We didn't maybe know like the degree to which things were bad. But what we wanted to see was like, how are you going to stop this from happening again?
And Kyle, I totally agree, but it's not happening. It's worse than that. Google, Apple, all of them are still giving money to Wuhan and to all these other bioweapon labs. They're still doing, Bill Gates is still running around behind the scenes. Kennedy cut a lot of the new stuff, but they're still there, active and operating. Fauci openly perjuring himself to Congress. Where are the this is a literal mad scientist, Dr. Frankenstein, running around creating more Frankensteins, and the clock's ticking here. Like she said, this is world-ending crap we're talking about.
It's every single level of bad things that can happen, right? So it's world-ending crap, which is just too much for us to even, like, you know, conceptualize the evil that that comes into. And then it gets into government policy shaping and how many people lost their jobs because they didn't want to comply with a COVID mandate when OSHA was pushing it. Or they were in the federal service and they lost their jobs, and people around me are dealing with that. Or they were in the military and they weakened a bunch of people who had principles, who actually said, listen, I'm going to hold the line on this and I'm not willing to do something because this wasn't a requisite. Was it when I joined on? And so every single level, from administrative to, like you say, kind of like diabolical James Bond level villainry. And what happens? What are we seeing? What are the results? This very clearly to me is there was some sort of a change. We got hot and heavy Donald Trump right out of the gate. He was signing executive orders. Everything looked good. We had Doge. We had Elon Musk with a chainsaw. We had people that were shutting down USAID. We had fraud that was coming out. And then it appears, and this is just me looking from the outside, same as you, but I look in there and it sounds like somebody said, that's as much as you're going to get. And they don't really have the choice. I've heard Tucker talk about like maybe a supra governmental agency or governmental organization, people that are really above and beyond and outside of government, whether they be, you know, billionaires or people who are working in some sort of agreement that whatever they're doing is not what we wanted. And we don't actually have the say that we hope we did. And I think Americans are seeing that. That's why you end up not getting Butler. It's why you end up not getting, you know, the rest of the story on Jeffrey Epstein. There are literally millions of documents that still haven't been released. Every single thing that has to do with counterintelligence, which should be voluminous on Jeffrey Epstein, has been hidden.
Let's talk about, we haven't talked about Epstein in months together. All the new stuff coming out, Democrats plan and promise day one massive Epstein hearings if they flip the House, which I think they'll do. We'll be right back.
Alex Jones is off the air.
There's a lot of noise right now.
Taking me off the air. It is beyond essential that you continue to spread the word about the broadcast and continue to support us.
That's usually when it matters most, to have people in your corner who don't flinch. We've been a partner of this program and of Alex's for a long time.
I'm handing out ice water in the Sahara. I mean, it is such the top rated, the biggest company, because they're the best. And he's a patriot.
We're not going anywhere, and that commitment runs to you. Here's the part that matters. With us, it's 8% when you buy and 0% when you sell. And here's something else. After you make your first purchase and become a client, if you're holding metals you bought somewhere else, bring them to us. We'll help you liquidate them. No commission. That means even if you didn't originally buy them from us, we'll still take care of you. That's not a promotion. It's not something that's for a limited time only. That's just the way we do business. Give us a call and we'll bend over backwards to help you.
Visit kepm.com/gold to get started, or give us a call at 720-605-3900 and let us help you make room for what matters most.
Spot price of the metal in the ground. miners haven't even touched it yet. Then they pull the metal out of the ground, they dig their tunnels, they drive it to the refinery, they melt it down, make it into a coin or a bar. That's wholesale. That's usually 3 to 5% over spot. We charge 8% on top of wholesale. When you liquidate, we charge zero.
Buy gold and silver bullion at wholesale. You can look every day what the price is, type in what's wholesale gold and silver, and then you get it from them with a little processing fee, and then they buy it back for nothing with no cost. That's unprecedented. It's so easy. KPM.com/gold. Get a free telephone consultation, email. You can call 720-605-3900, 720-605-3900. This water filter is even better than the best gravity-fed filters. Reduces everything, takes everything out to non-detectable levels. That's the technical name, because you can't find it, but under the federal law, the spectrometers find nothing. You just say non-detectable. All the glyphosate, all the atrazine, the thousands of other chemicals, it's all taken out. And it's beautiful stainless steel, highest quality, at a price lower than stuff that isn't even stainless steel, and the filters aren't even as good. This is the best, thealexjonesstore.com. This is the platinum, the very best of gravity-fed filters. Everybody needs to filter their water. If you let all the runoff and toxins and things that are going on, the number one place you get is the water, even worse, the air or food, you're crazy. Your children, your wife, your husband, your crew members, your employees. This does 3 gallons. You just fill it up. You got water for days for drinking, cooking, you name it. Put it in your kitchen, put it in your cabin, put it in your business. TheAlexJonesStore.com. It is amazing. I've already shown you the documents. We have articles running, reports running, ads running. It's posted at TheAlexJonesStore.com. The test that this is the very best water filtration with the very best stainless steel housing. It is a work of art. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And Sunday is the last day at midnight to get 50% off on Ultimate Life Force. And that is a horse pill right here. We just took the two top brands of Spike Protein Detox, cardiovascular booster, checked with scientists and doctors and formulators. It was okay to combine the two formulas into these horse pills. So this is the strongest, best detox cardiovascular booster. Everybody should be on this at least a few times a year as a regimen. It's good to take year-round. That's 50% off. That ends in a couple days. Up to 40% off all the other products, the methylene blue, the Shilajit, the Irish Sea Moss. Massive end of spring sale going right now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Rallying patriots worldwide in defense of human liberty. It's Alex Jones.
All right, Carl Serafin put out the $64 trillion question earlier. Trump, about 4 or 5 months into the administration, made a drastic change. Why did he do that? A lot of folks say, well, I don't care anymore. It doesn't matter. No, it does matter. And it matters about what power structures are in there, who's controlling the deep state. I've been on air 30 plus years trying to get people to admit there's a deep state, analyzing what the different agendas are, who the players are, knowing is half the battle, like G.I. Joe says, then taking action on the rest. This is key. But we're going to table that for a moment and go to this breaking news. President Trump said earlier today on his 80th birthday that by this evening, the deal would be done and that they would have a done deal with Iran. The Pakistani president that was helping do it says, yes, the deal has been signed. The Iranians just 2 hours ago were saying there is no deal. We've heard this 40-plus times from Trump. I hope this is the case. We've got what the Iranians say the deal is, what Trump said the deal is. They're similar about giving up the highly enriched and they won't control the strait. We'll see what happens here. But if you look at the past announcements, they have not held up. So we're going to be looking at that. But here is a one-minute clip with J.D. Vance talking about it. This literally just aired on Fox minutes ago, and Kyle was monitoring it and gave it to us. Here it is.
First of all, I do think it's a big moment for the United States of America. Thanks, of course, to the president's leadership and the hard work of the entire team. Three things that I think are important for the American people just to appreciate about what this deal does for all of us as Americans. Number one, this is the immediate opening of the Straits of Hormuz and, of course, the lifting of the naval blockade that we've had on Iran along with it. The number two thing that it means is that Iran will never have a nuclear weapon, and not just pursue a nuclear weapon, but procure or try to buy a nuclear weapon as well. That's built into this agreement. And then the third thing is, and this only happens, to be clear, if Iran delivers on their promise. And so there's an approach here where we verify and where there are real benefits so long as Iran meets their end of the obligation. But if the Iranians comply with his deal, it is going to fundamentally transform the Middle East for the next 50 years. It's going to end the war. It's going to make the Middle East more investable. It's going to mean a lot of prosperity.
All right, Kyle, give us your take on this. I have Trump's statement here. I'll read in a moment, but I want to believe this. But if you operate with past behavior being the most indicative of future behavior, I don't think this is going to stick. What do you think?
Well, he just had a lot of language in there too about if this happens and if this is not a, that's not a very strong confident statement that, you know, we have a strong belief that they're going to operate this way. Here's what I think. I think Donald Trump wanted to celebrate a birthday, wanted to have a UFC fight, wants to do a bunch of stuff on the White House lawn. I think that that was the plan, and he's been promising that there was going to be a deal. So he needed a deal, and whatever it looked like was going to be signed, and he was going to announce it. And if they renege on it, look, we had the Israelis doing an incursion into Lebanon just last night or yesterday morning. So one way or another, I think if the Iranians pull out of it or say that it didn't work, or, you know, argue that it was a decentralized authority and that the main contingent of Iran said this, but the military leaders in the field decided not to agree with it, there's that excuse. The other option is that the Israelis go do something that violates it. And then we have that, you know, sort of dragging us back in. I have zero faith that this is going to be what people want, because, as you said, past performance is the best predictor of what we should see in the future. And what we've seen is this claim made a bunch of times. And I think he was going to sign anything. By the way, I'm seeing the same thing over on X from people that I follow that had been around the Trump administration in and out of it from the first administration and the second. Their belief is essentially he was going to sign something. It didn't matter what it was. He wants to see a good UFC fight and be able to celebrate and say he's the conquering hero. And, you know, tomorrow morning he can deal with that problem the next time.
I think that's the case. And going back,
sadly pessimistic, but
well, this has been going like 108 days now. And I remember back at the time they said 4 days it'll be over. He was given bad intelligence. Yep. Israel drug us into it. And then all the hopium white pillars said, oh, you're a traitor. And then every time he announces the war is over, they go, see, idiot, 10D chess. And I'm like, I want Trump to succeed, like you said, but he's not. And I think being a cult member and just going along with all of this dysfunction is a bad thing. What do you think is going to happen in the midterms? From what I'm seeing, I think they lose the House for sure. Probably the Senate and the Democrats are going to go completely ape. And Trump only has himself to blame for this Iran war that was unpopular, that derailed the recovery, spiked inflation, coming out and saying there is no Epstein, it's a hoax. I mean, these were all self-inflicted wounds. What's your take on that?
Short of a economic miracle and some sort of massive refocusing and you know, sort of showing the American people that they come first, I don't know how you win without accomplishing the domestic agenda that Donald Trump promised. You know, all people need to do is look at whatever their big hot button. You know, if you were really big on sealing the border, you got that. But that was a administrative and an executive agency thing only. Theoretically, Republicans have both, you know, both houses, the House and the Senate, and they have the ability to sign it at the White House, and they can't get anything done on border security. So what have they done that's permanent? On that, it turns around immediately. Then you got the largest deportation operation. Did that happen? The answer is no, it didn't. For anybody who thinks that they're doing enough, I've got friends who are literally out there in the streets every single day, and they're grabbing people onesie-twosie. That's what they're doing.
Bovino said Trump killed it. He said he killed.
Yeah, and he's out. So again, it's that same pivot, right? There were all these pivots. There was this initial energy, and it looked awesome. I mean, I don't know if anybody else was fist pumping, but I was seeing it. I went, look at this guy. He's a freaking animal. He's coming in with a vengeance. And that's what we wanted. And so that's what people were excited about, and myself included. I was the most unexpected. Like, I didn't even think we were going to have an election in November. I thought we would have seen some sort of a coup. I think we would have seen if there was a possibility of pulling it off. That's what I expected. So for whatever it's worth, I was wrong about that for sure. You want to put it on
the first 4 months of Trump was just unreal. It was, there was so much momentum, and then it just went.
And it happened about the same time. It happened in the summer. It happened in the June, July. This was right about the time when we started asking questions about Epstein. It was right about the time when we had Bongino and Patel go out and say that, you know, he killed himself and that's the end of it. It's about the time when we had those floods here last year in Texas. And
it
they
all
dropped that
started
Epstein memo.
It all started with the deer in the headlights interview on Fox with Patel and Mongino. It all started then. That was the marker.
And you'll remember they went to Axios and they dropped a memo stating they were closing the investigation. Now, we just had Pam Bondi last week talking about how she was not the one who ran that. That was all Todd Blanche. That was her claim. And so she said Todd Blanche was the guy. It was delegated to him. And between him as the deputy attorney general and the FBI director and the deputy director of the FBI, they all got together. They all agreed on it. There's no daylight. By the way, nobody had the balls to sign that memo, which closed down and announced to the public that they were going to not be doing an investigation any further. That's what opened up the door for Tom Massey to come in and to say that he wanted the Epstein Transparency Act. He dropped that 3 days later. You couldn't do it previously because you had an ongoing investigation. So for all the people that were complaining about Massey, this is the through line. You had Trump come in and promise something, even if he said that he would agree to it and his surrogates were the ones doing it. Then we had that interview. Then they dropped that memo overnight. And then suddenly everything took a grinding change where anybody who brought it up after they tried to close it, and I think they tried to sneak it past the goalie, and it didn't catch. I mean, it caught a lot of wind. And then you had the members of Congress stepping out. Nobody wanted to be caught voting against it in a roll call. So then they were supposed to release this stuff, and it's just gone from bad to worse. And then, as I think I pointed out to you guys in February, right at the exact same day, within 12 hours of the sort of conflict or war in Iran starting, the platform that Donald Trump ran on, which was called Agenda 47. It was 20 promises to make America great again, which included something that they haven't delivered on and I think is fatal. They pulled that down from the website so that people couldn't reference it. Here's the crazy part, Alex, and you can look on that. Look at number 19 and just read it off. And you tell me if we're going to have a good, midterm elections without number 19.
Number 19, secure our elections, including same day voting, voter identification, paper ballots, and proof of citizenship. Look at California, clear chicanery. Look at these other elections. It's turned up on high.
It's awful. And here's this crazy thing. I'm reading through Donald Trump's feed over on his True Social account, which, by the way, is a terrible website. It's really hard to walk through it. It clicks into weird places. But as I'm running down it, he's going on this rant about whether or not he's going to get Bill Pulte to be the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence. And that guy has no business being in that job. I have no idea why that guy was recommended. He's younger than I am. He has no experience in that field. It seems crazy to me. So you've got somebody who has no background, Tulsi Gabbard leaving. She at least worked in the intel community and around the intel community, understands like the language and how it works. And he's trying to marry the nomination of Bill Pulte with FISA 702, which Trump was against FISA until 5 seconds ago. And then after this pivot, and it happened in June or July of last year, like a year ago, he's now 100% championing that we need to get a clean FISA. Like, who the hell is this guy? And so I think we get this feeling that somebody really did a body snatch on the man, because he's going opposite to everything that isn't just like what he said. It's what you'd think would be his own sense of self-preservation. I don't know how you go from saying the deep state spied on me, an election was stolen and all this other kind of stuff, and then say, I need people that have no experience in this really critical role of trying to put a watchdog and really bring the intel communities to heel.
Had Tulsi in there that at least knew to get smart people in that would follow the orders. She was 90% of all the key.
Too.
I mean, they got Crossfire Hurricane. They got Arctic Frost. They were spying on Trump illegally with FISA. She delivered the goods and now she's gone.
She did it. She did exactly what she said she was going to go in and do. And I think she was handled and managed in some degree. I know people that were involved in what was called the Director's Initiative Group, where they were actually carrying out sort of Donald Trump to Tulsi. Tulsi sends it out to the task workers and said, get this done. And they were getting after it. And the problem is they were running into such a massive wave of sort of, just like uphill battle. Every single thing was a fight and they were getting it done. They were slowly working through it. That was disbanded at the end of last year. And that's about the same time that you saw Bongino leave the FBI. And then we've just had a complete 180 on all the things that were important. And now we're cheering on FISA. You've got Mike Johnson saying that if we don't get it, we're going to lose lives. Somehow we managed to get through almost all the Cold War without FISA. Do you realize that, Alex? Like, FISA being used for counterterrorism purposes is a brand new invention of the post 9/11 world. So we just keep evolving bigger and bigger, more surveillance, all the things that government does, that just grows itself. And the minute anybody wants to try to curtail that, this is really the mission of the deep state. And I think you would know this But the most broad and simple way is the deep state, which is people who are in permanent Washington, and it's not nefarious per se. They're just people that are working in jobs and they think their job is important. The deep state's job is to maintain the status quo, and the status quo of government is grow government always. That's why we have the biggest government we've ever had. And we've completely abandoned any sort of right wing.
Well, that's
American
a whole
nother
subject. That's why we needed Trump's recovery to work.
That's what I thought he was doing. I thought that's what he ran on, that he was going to go and gut this thing. You know, the craziest thing in all of the Trump promises was that he was going to fund. This is maybe the most radical thing he said. And I was like, let's go. He said he was going to fund the American government on tariff revenue only. Do you remember that?
Yes.
The only way you could do that is if you cut government back to the size of when we used to do that. And that's about a 90% cut out of government. And I kind of thought he was kind of backhanded saying we're going to reduce government in such a way because we're only going to have the money that comes in from tariff revenue, which means we can't have all that stuff.
Who was actually doing it. And then right around that same time in June, boom, all that happens. And this is the cynical part of me. And I'm not saying this is what happened. Trump got more sophisticated. The Israel lobby came in and said, the Democrats are failing. We can come in and take control of the deep state for you. We'll protect you. Use all these investigations to get the dirt on all of them. Then we'll use it against them and use it to make them stand down. And then we'll take over. And I did see a lot of the media attacks and the establishment stuff back down the last year as he began to sell us out. Until now, there's not a lot of opposition against him in the power structure. But I think they're going to double cross him when they win the midterms, if they do.
Of course. I mean, if that's the only thing we've ever seen is that it's never about, oh, we have some loyalty because you did the right thing that we wanted you to do. It's always about what have you done for me lately? So I totally agree with you. The sad thing is that it seems like Donald Trump has gotten sophisticated to the point where he said, I lost money in my first presidency. I'm going to make it back with a vengeance this time. And so the Trump Foundation or the Trump Corporation has done very well. There's been a ton of money that's been taken out in crypto. We're talking in the tunes of like $3.5 billion. There have been rug pulls and fleeces and, you know, what looks like insider trading on the betting markets and all kinds of shorts been lobbied against, you know, tweets that are coming out or whatever they are, Truth Social posts. So we've seen what it looks like just a very introspective, like, I'm not going to be here forever. I'm going to get mine while I can. And it seems like people are interested in just ruling over the ashes, that whatever that thing was that they promised America, affordability and everything else. I just got out of California. I was out for a funeral, burying a family member. And it was almost $7 a gallon for gas out there. It was over $7 a gallon for diesel. And it was $6.15 on some days, $6.30 on other days. For freaking, you know, 89, 87 octane. And how do you live like that? You just can't. I went out for breakfast with my kids. I've got tiny little kids, Alex. My oldest is 8 and I have 4 children. It was over $100 for us to eat breakfast. This is like eggs and bacon and pancakes. And so I don't know how people survive on that. You can't even live like a normal American life from 20 years ago.
And by the way, in California, there are now huge reservations in neighborhoods, which have security guards, deal meth, drugs, and the police won't go into them. So it's not just Skid Row now. It's these huge complexes. And people go, oh, well, you know, part of the cost is the big taxes in California. Yeah, we know that. But you have the general fuel costs go up. And it just adds to it. And again, some people said to me, why do you only care about the economy? Iran's evil. We got to take them out. I'm like, well, A, the Pentagon said they probably weren't going to fall. They closed the strait. B, it's not like it's a regular recession or depression. We're on the verge of bankruptcy. Now servicing the debt is as big or bigger now than the GDP every year. We're in banana republic territory. We need this for the future to not implode into the Great Reset and then have them roll out the central bank digital currencies and all the stuff that they have planned. This is not a normal, oh, let's just have a recession for a war. This is crazy town. And I know you talk a lot about that on your show because I watch clips of it all the time. I mean, no economist disagrees. Warren Buffett's on record. We are positioned for doom, and so is the rest of the world. I mean, I'm not trying to be a doom and gloomer here. All the numbers are bad, folks. And this war.
What's crazy is we've been in places like this before, Alex. I mean, historically, America has gotten into itself, you know, gotten into really bad positions financially. And I had a conversation because I'm sitting with my parents over the last week. And we were talking about the first house they ever bought. And they bought it in Northern California. And they bought it right as Carter was leaving and Ronald Reagan was coming into office. And they paid like a 17% interest rate, you know, because that's what people did historically when they wanted to try to maintain the money structure. They're like, oh, we got a problem. Inflation is really bad. And this was right after the fuel shortages in the 70s and all the other kind of wild stuff. So they tightened the money supply. That's what you do. You have to basically endure something really awful for a lot of people. And you make housing, you know, housing prices have to drop down. But what we heard Donald Trump say is two things that are basically in contrast. He said he wants to try to fix inflation. That's something he promised in the agenda. He said he's going to try to make America affordable. And at the same time, he wants to preserve the value of homes, which are wildly inflated and have doubled or tripled and sometimes quadrupled over the last 10 years. And you can't do that. And he's doing it for a voting base of people, you know, whether it be boomers or whether it be people that are senior Gen X that have properties that they own. They're getting taxed at some crazy high rate. The dollar is not worth what it was. And so all the things that you would normally do to pull yourself out of that tailspin means you usually have to tighten your belt. You have to go into some austerity measures. And we seem completely unwilling to do it. And so then we got into this voluntary conflict with Iran. And if you listen to what Tulsi Gabbard basically said under oath, if you listen to what Joe Kent said, and you listen to anybody that has been in the intelligence community, they said that even though Iran would love to be able to project violence into the United States homeland, they don't have the ability to do it. And they haven't had the ability to do it. It's very aspirational. And I thought we already handled that again, also in summer of last year. We did that thing, Operation Midnight Hammer, and we could do those anytime we needed to. We can launch, you know, an attack apparently from the middle of the United States and fly around the globe and be able to bomb their facilities and set them back as much as we want.
But Israel wants regime change. And, you know, I know you never had some hard on for Israel, neither do I, but they are a foreign interest and they really are trying to run things. What do you make of the NDAA and the attempts to synchronize and get into everything and no longer get aid from us because they'll co-own our weapon systems? I mean, this is just wild.
It's so out in the open and so in your face. And I see two things that are done regularly, Alex, because look, I never cared about Israel one way or another. Like, I'm an America only kind of guy. Like, I just don't care about other countries. I don't even want to go to other countries. I can see everything I want to see in the United States. And I spent a semester abroad when I was in college. I lived in London. I've been to about 25 different countries, you know. Interesting. Great. There's a ton in America that I haven't seen, and I'm happy to do it here where I can carry a handgun on me and I can drive my minivan around with my kids. So I don't need to go anywhere else. I don't care about Israel at all. It's a non-factor. However, if Israel continues to shove it in my face that they're able to buy elections, that they're able to throw enough money at somebody that they can overturn a House primary and make it the most expensive primary in history, if they're going to go out there and openly lobby for things, and I very recently had a conversation with a member of the intelligence community, somebody who's about ready to retire, and the statement that I got was so unsettling. I didn't ever see a dissemination control. When you have classified documents, they basically give you the level of classification, and then they have what's called dissemination controls. And so it might be unclassified, but you can only disseminate to law enforcement or official use. It may be secret and no foreign, which means no foreign government gets it, or it's secret and you can do what's called, it says rel to, release to, and you can release it to certain groups, whether it be the Five Eyes or different countries. And there's a category underneath at least our secret classification that allows for release to the United States and Israel only. And it's specific information that only goes to those partners. It doesn't go to the Brits. It doesn't go to the Kiwis. It doesn't go to the Aussies. It doesn't go to the Canadians. It's only to Israel. And I'd never seen that when I was working in the FBI. I didn't even know it was a real thing. And I brought it up with an Intel community member and said, is this real? Like, I read about it. I see it's in the guidebook that lists out the classifications. Do we use this? And the statement came back to me, yes, and far more frequently than I'm comfortable with. And so we do crazy amounts of information sharing. But at the same time, you listen to people that have come out of the CIA, that have come out of NSA, that have come out of these DIA, and they say, the Israelis come in and they're always spying on us. They're always trying to spy on us. I've got buddies that were in law enforcement, like federal law enforcement, that were doing overseas work. They were going to, other countries, and sometimes they do a landing, so, in Tel Aviv or in Jerusalem. And they said when they were switching planes there, they would have beautiful women come up and do what's called a bump. On a regular basis, they would try to bump and recruit our guys that are, they're all cleared personnel, but it doesn't mean they're working on sensitive stuff. Yeah, because the Israelis are constantly working against us.
Honeypots, stingrays, mm-hmm. Breaking into things. Kiriakou talks about it.
We call them a frenemy. They're a frenemy at best. And so when I keep hearing politicians come out and say they're our greatest ally, obviously someone is writing this PR garbage. And then the second thing that you see them always doing is conflating the presence of American Jewish people
And then if you were to say something about, you know, about Israel, then you're somehow anti-Semitic because they've basically conflated the religious nature or the race of the people and the people that live in a foreign country. To me, that's bizarre. I grew up over and over hearing, Alex, you probably did too, Israel's an amazing place. It's the only liberal democracy in the Middle East. It's the only place where Christians and Muslims and Jewish people can all live together and they're all represented in the government and blah, 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 blah. And you find out, like, the way that they turn it
meanwhile, they're vaporizing Christian Lebanon and taking it right now.
That's right. And knocking down settlements that are in the West Bank that are Christian, the only remaining Christian settlement. It was a front and center piece of the news from a group I used to work with. And you're sitting there going, how do we ignore these two things? Because they're in conflict with each other. They cannot be our greatest ally and then also be trying to drag us into a conflict and, you know,
well,
obviously
that's the
going
thing
against
is,
what
is
Donald
there,
Trump
is,
was saying.
Is they're definitely arrogant. They're definitely making their move. And it's very unpopular and it's treasonous. And now it's front and center. And it's 80% of the American people don't like this. So I think Israel's bit off more than they can chew. We're almost out of time. But in the 60 seconds, how do you see this unfolding?
I think you're exactly right. I think they've bitten off more than they can chew. And I had this conversation with Mark Haug, who recently got a settlement from DOJ. He's one of the guys that was targeted by the last DOJ. And he said something to me that stuck with me. He says, the devil's always loudest when he's losing. And I thought that was a really poignant thing. And that actually turns out to be the case for a lot of different people. When you're behind the eight ball, when you're losing, you tend to be complaining and whining and louder. And you tend to be, you know, try to puff yourself up to be bigger than you are. When people are winning and they're getting away with something, they're very happy for you not to know it. I mean, that's been my experience with people. If you're doing some shenanigans behind the scene, you don't want to call any attention to that. But when you start losing and the status quo is failing on you, you might actually need to be louder than you were before. I think this rattle is almost like, you know, it has the potential of being a death rattle. Now, maybe they turn it, maybe they get what they want. But I think they've turned the Gen Alphas. I think they've turned the Gen Zs. I think they've turned a lot of people in my generation. I'm like the oldest millennial out there. I was born in 81. So, like, I think the people in my age bracket and even people older than me are looking and just going, look, we don't care that Israel exists. We're not mad that they're there. What we don't want to do is fund them. And we certainly don't want them dragging us into conflicts and wars that cost us, you know, blood and treasure.
We don't want Israel to run us. It's not our country. They're openly saying they run us, and it's wrong. Kyle Serafin, KyleSerafinShow.com, on X, Kyle Serafin. Great job. Thank you so much, my friend.
Good seeing you, Alex.
God bless you. We're just reporting the facts, folks. Letting you figure it out. We respect you, so we just tell you what we believe is accurate, and we're pretty damn accurate. Speaking of another accurate guy, Royce White from the Belly of the Beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota, loaded for bear, takes over 2 hours right now in 2 minutes. Share the live feeds at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at rumble.com/ The Alex Jones Show Live. Great job, crew.
Your arm been hacked off by a homeless person with a samurai sword? Try Shilajit gummies today.
A guy in Venice Beach just got his arm nearly hacked off by some tweaker with a samurai sword. And as of 4:15, he is still on the loose. And seemingly, the reaction from our local government is basically like, oh, shit, like, these things just happen. Like, this is our new normal. That, dude. I want to live in an LA that is safe to go out, where I don't have to worry about walking around and getting my arm hacked off by some tweaker looking for drugs.
Sorry, I ate a Shilajit gummy. Sorry, I thought I could finish it before that clip was over. You caught me. Shilajit gummies, folks. We're not joking. They're very good. Shilajit gummies. Are you a leftist idiot that thinks it's normal that men get their arms chopped off with swords when trying to go to the beach? In California, Shilajit gummies are for you. Consumers of Shilajit gummies, they know places to avoid. If you want to avoid having your arm nearly cut off by a sword in Venice Beach, California, you need to be taking Shilajit gummies today. I do love these things. They are really delicious, but they really do give you a kick. And you only get to take one. That is the worst part of Shilajit gummies, is you want to take multiple, but you're only supposed to take one. You can take more if you want. Also, I love the Modern World Survival Stack. A massive discount if you get three products together. It's the Shilajit capsules, the Atomic Defense, and the Sea Moss capsules, which are packed with vitamins, minerals to support overall wellness, thyroid health, and immune function. The Atomic Defense is for daily defense and cellular support, while Shilajit capsules support natural energy, stamina, and daily vitality. Get one or all of them now at thealexjonesstore.com. Share the links at alexjoneslive.com and on Rumble at thealexjonesshowlive.com. Shilajit gummies.